This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
President Jacob Zuma has 5 days to explain himself to a court, and by extension, to his country, for his widely unpopular decision to fire a well-respected finance minister and reshuffle his cabinet in March.
That's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. We'll have full details coming up. Also, a U.S. service member has been killed during an operation against al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. New research shows that Somalia's devastating drought is having serious consequences for more than 1 million children there, and fossils have been found from what may be one of Africa's last dinosaurs. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a U.S. service member has been killed during an operation against al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. The U.S. military says the service member was killed near Bari, Somalia, approximately 40 miles west of Mogadishu. The military's Africa Command says U.S. forces were conducting an advise and assist mission alongside members of the Somali National Army. A small number of American military personnel are stationed in Somalia to help the Somali government combat al-Shabaab. The group is an affiliate of al-Qaeda and has tried for a decade to topple the government and turn Somalia into a strict Islamic state. Well, new research shows that Somalia's devastating drought is having serious consequences for more than 1 million children. Save the Children says they're at risk of increased violence, child labor, and of being separated from their families. The group's new study found the impact of the drought has gone far beyond life-threatening shortages of essentials like food and water. It's also causing high levels of psychological distress in children who are showing unusual symptoms such as bouts of crying and screaming. Violence against children is also on the rise, including sexual violence such as rape and molestation. Devendra Tok is the global media manager for Save the Children in Hargeisa, Somaliland. He spoke with me about the plight of children in Somalia.
During emergencies such as drought here in Somalia, children are always the most vulnerable, and children face many problems. One of them is child protection. We know that children during such situations, particularly when families are getting separated and families are migrating and children have to move with their parents to new places, they have to meet with new people and get accustomed to being in a new place and also in strange circumstances. They also have no school to go to. All these conditions make the situation of children very perilous. The first issue, of course, is that children are with strangers and therefore they are much more vulnerable to abuse. And of course, when you have a drought situation which compels families into deeper levels of poverty, then there are issues like child labor which come into the picture because families need anything and everything to get along with their lives.
Can you give us an example of some of the experiences that children in Somalia are facing because of the drought situation?
We were visiting a few communities. In particular, we met with a family living just by the main highway from Hargeisa when you're going towards the western side, where there are more greener areas apparently. And they've been there for 4 months. And one issue that was pointed out was that children absolutely hate living there. For example, children are scared of the hyenas because these families are camping out in temporary shelters out in the open. And they can hear the hyenas crying at night and even approaching their homes. So children are terrified of these situations. There's been a bit of rain recently. Suddenly it gets very cold in those regions. These families there don't have adequate shelter. They don't even have any kind of sheets to sleep on. And even their clothes are running out. So these children feel very cold and they are wet. So children are really, really under a lot of stress. Moreover, when they see their parents also being stressed out, it really complicates matters for children because they just don't know whom to turn to. And the other issue, of course, for them is that they are not going to school. As we know, that final exams for children are coming up in July this year, and many schools are either not open or children have moved so far away from their schools and are in such a situation that sometimes their parents can't even pay a paltry amount which is required to pay for the secondary education here.
Also, you had mentioned that they are at risk of sexual violence such as rape and molestation, and this is due to them being separated from their families. So what kind of treatment is there available for them, especially regarding the psychological trauma of this?
Yes, of course, psychosocial support is very important. Creating awareness among communities is what we do very well. So therefore, we have integrated much of our education work also into our other programs, because with the schools closed, we are ensuring that, you know, we are able to quickly set up even child-friendly spaces. These child-friendly spaces have a trained person to provide them with recreational and educational opportunities and basically become a hub where children can be with other children and also feel more secure. You know, it's not very easy to come by figures about whether a child is raped or whether a child is missing. But therefore, through dissemination with communities, working at the community level with the communities, particularly now in the drought, we would intensify working with the community to ensure that the community is aware of the risks towards children and how to be able to, you know, overcome them, which includes simple things like, you know, taking care of health and hygiene.
Looking ahead in this situation, what do you see in the future for these children?
Our Save the Children U.S. CEO, her name is Carolyn Miles, was here for the last 4 or 5 days, and she mentioned that we have to really now start to reimagine the future, which means that we have to find solutions which will work on a long-term basis. Just a couple of ideas which came up there was that we must also focus on education. Education is the only thing which in the long term can build resilience and safeguard the livelihoods of the livelihoods of society as well as the well-being of children, either during the phase of an emergency or thereafter.
Devendra Tok is the global media manager for Save the Children. He spoke with me from Hargeisa, Somaliland. South Africa's ruling African National Congress pushed back today on a high court ruling that President Jacob Zuma must explain his rationale for the firing of a popular finance minister in March. It's the latest sign of pressure on Zuma ahead of a no-confidence vote in parliament. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
President Jacob Zuma has 5 days to explain himself to a court and, by extension, to his country, for his widely unpopular decision to fire a well-respected finance minister and reshuffle his cabinet in March. It's the latest twist in an ongoing political drama that has besieged the increasingly unpopular president. Tens of thousands of people have recently held marches demanding his resignation. Earlier this week, the president was booed off the stage at a political rally held for union workers. On Thursday, a high court approved an opposition party demand that Zuma provide records to explain why he fired Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan as part of the controversial reshuffle that prompted widespread outrage and caused a major ratings agency to downgrade the nation's sovereign credit rating. Zuma's ruling ANC panned the ruling as unfettered encroachment of the judiciary into the realm of the executive. The Opposition Democratic Alliance, which has filed numerous court cases against Zuma, hailed it as a victory, not only for the DA, but for all South Africans who deserve to know on what basis the president made this disastrous decision. Politics professor Daryl Glazer of the University of Witwatersrand says this is a strange moment for South African politics.
We're in a kind of exceptional circumstance where the judiciary is having to, as it were, put out fires and pick up pieces because other parts of the state are not functioning effectively. So a lot of people will excuse or justify the court's role in that way. But I don't think it's ideal that the court should be extending itself too far into the domain of other branches of government. I think, however, on the whole, its interventions in relation to Zuma have been healthy for our constitutional democracy. So it's a difficult call.
South Africa's constitution permits the president to make changes to his cabinet, but also stipulates that decisions should be fair and reasonable. That's why this case got to court. Initially, Zuma and his allies said they fired the minister because of a widely discredited intelligence report that accused him of plotting against the president. Glazer says the court's decision could have a major impact.
What has to be decided is whether there are other elements in play, whether the executive is required to give some account of its decisions, but then does that mean it has to account for all of its decisions, not only this one, but if one's to be impartial about it, all decisions in the future, because you wouldn't want to give the impression that the court is taking sides in a political dispute. So this such a principle would have to be impartially applied, and it would probably be quite unusual amongst the world's political leaders and to have presidents or prime ministers that have to publicly explain every cabinet reshuffle.
It's likely, legal and political pundits say, that the president will appeal the ruling and thereby avoid a courtroom confession. It's also likely, they say, that the president's drama is far from over. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Mozambique's opposition leader has indefinitely extended a unilateral truce he first announced in December. AFP quotes Afonso Dhlakama as saying, while it is not the end of the war, it is the beginning of the end. He calls it great news for the people of Mozambique. His Renamo rebels had fought the government between 1976 and 1992, a war that left 1 million dead. However, rebels renewed attacks in 2013, accusing government leaders of not fulfilling their promises and enriching themselves. About 800 rebels are believed based in the central Garangosa mountain range. The Nigerian government is downplaying rumors about President Buhari's health after missing his third weekly cabinet meeting. A government minister says Buhari was in the office on May 2nd, but stayed home on May 3rd on the advice of his doctors. The three-day visit by members of the Inter-Burundi Dialogue ended today in Bujumbura. The consultations to restore peace and security were held this week after the government boycotted the talks in Arusha in February. Moses Javier Armana has the story.
Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa's mediation team ended consultations after meeting with the civil society organizations, religious leaders, youth and women in the country. Mkapa's team is the longest serving since 2015, when protests erupted against the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial third term in the office. Three previous mediation teams had been rejected by either the government or the opposition for being biased. Ken Vitisha is the Kenyan ambassador to Burundi and President Uhuru Kenyatta's special advisor to the facilitator.
We are here to seek your views. They are as varied as the number of Burundians. But if we get a consensus from as many Burundians, that will form a possible agreement towards the 2020 general elections.
Opposition leaders say the Burundi government has been a major roadblock to the success of the dialogue. Agathon Rwasa is an opposition leader and deputy speaker of the Burundi parliament.
What is being done by Mkapa is just to try to help that government hardliners to come to their senses and accept the dialogue. Unfortunately, this just turning into another more critical situation where Pierre Nkurunziza is intended to manipulate the constitution by claiming that it is the wish of the people, although it isn't.
The Burundi government had boycotted the round of Arusha talks in February, saying that some opposition members who were invited by Mkapa's team were involved in the failed coup last year. The Kenyan ambassador to Burundi, who is also a member of the Mkapa's mediation team, says that Mkapa won't impose anything on Burundians during the talks.
Because we want to listen to you, we want to listen to as many Burundians as possible, and we believe by coming here and listening to all these groups, we'll get a general consensus on what Burundians want.
The East African Community heads of state are expected to meet late this month on the simmering political crisis in Burundi that had led to more than 500 people losing their lives and more than 400,000 have fled to neighboring countries. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A U.S. service member has been killed during an operation against al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. New research shows that Somalia's devastating drought is having serious consequences for more than 1 million children. South Africa's ruling African National Congress pushed back today on a high court ruling that President Jacob Zuma must explain his reasons for firing a popular finance minister in March. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Well, Morocco has been boosting its phosphate mining industry, hoping to corner up to 40% of the world market within 3 years. The country's huge deposits of phosphate, a vital nutrient for agriculture, are part of an ancient seabed that's littered with history. For example, in one of Morocco's strip mines, fossils have been found of what may be one of Africa's last dinosaurs. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Very little is known about dinosaurs in Africa during the Cretaceous period, but they, like others around the world, were wiped out by an asteroid impact 66 million years ago. One of them was the Shinanosaurus barbaricus. A piece of its jawbone was found in Morocco's Oulad Abdoun Basin, west of the Atlas Mountains. Dr. Nick Longrich is one of the lead researchers.
It's a carnivorous dinosaur. It's a two-legged predator, similar to T-Rex. It's not quite as large. It's about maybe 8 or 9 meters long.
Longrich is with the Milner Center for Evolution and the Department of Biology and Biochemistry at the University of Bath. He says the African dinosaur is more primitive than Tyrannosaurus rex.
A lot of people might not appreciate this, but T-Rex is actually very closely related to birds, closer to birds than almost any other dinosaur you can think of, closer to birds than it is to, say, Brontosaurus or to this thing. And so this thing is less bird-like. It's got a smaller brain. T-Rex was probably feathered. This thing would have been scaly, but it walked on two legs like a T-Rex or like a bird. So it has a very short, blunt snout, kind of this bulldog snout, and incredibly reduced arms. So it actually has smaller arms than a Tyrannosaurus does. T-Rex could easily beat this thing in an arm wrestling contest.
It also had very tiny hands. Shinanosaurus barbaricus helps paint a picture of Africa 66 million years ago, even if just a few fossils were discovered in a mine.
It's not the first place you'd look for a dinosaur in marine rocks, but it's a huge phosphate strip mine, and the mines consist of these deposits laid down on the floor of an ancient sea. They're rich in bones and teeth and fragments from things like sharks, fish, marine reptiles, pterosaurs, things like that. And they sank to the bottom of the sea, and this bone kind of accumulates, and they mine this stuff and use it for fertilizer. And in the process, they uncover all these fossils.
Longrich says finding dinosaur fossils in an ancient seabed is like winning the lottery. He speculates on how the dinosaur got there.
Probably drowned and got washed out to sea. You know, some large animals will swim between islands, maybe got swept offshore by the current. Perhaps there's a flood and it got caught up by a river and the river kind of carried it out to sea once it drowned. So it's probably floating for a while and then the carcass just decomposed and sank to the seafloor.
Longrich says the Earth would have been a very different place had that asteroid missed the planet.
Just the slightest little deviation in the course of that asteroid, a little bit more radiation from the sun kind of pushing off course, a collision with a comet or asteroid kind of knocking that asteroid off course. If it hadn't hit, you know, there wouldn't have been the extinction of this animal. It wouldn't have gone extinct. Its descendants would have persisted for tens of millions of years until now, and we'd still have dinosaurs here.
Longrich worked with his colleagues based in Morocco, France, and Spain. Their findings appear in the journal Cretaceous Research. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Security Council has passed a resolution on the longest dispute in the African continent. It's between Morocco and the Polisario Front over the Western Sahara. The resolution calls for a resumption of the UN-sponsored negotiations between the two sides to peacefully settle the dispute. Mohamed Chakawi is a professor of conflict resolution at George Mason University near Washington, D.C. VOA's Mohamed Al-Shanawi asked him how this push for negotiation differs from the past UN attempts to bring peace to the area.
Apparently, there are three things that stand out in this new resolution 2351 adopted by the Security Council based on Secretary General Antonio Guterres' recommendations last month. First, there is a desire to relaunch the negotiation process with a dynamic and new spirit, according to the original recommendation, and the resumption of the political process with the aim of reaching a mutually acceptable political solution between the government of Morocco and the Polisario Front. And this should be a basis for the self-determination of the local population in the Western Sahara. There is also a call for a fifth round of direct negotiations between the two parties after four rounds of the so-called Manhattan talks in New York that started back in 2007. Second, the new resolution considers realism and spirit of compromise by the parties that should be essential to achieving the progress in negotiation, and encourages the neighboring countries like Algeria and Mauritania to make contributions. Third and last, the resolution expresses concern about the recent crisis in the buffer strip in Gargarat, and I think this is a very sticky issue, and the UN now is encouraging the Secretary General to explore ways to sort of contain this problem.
But while Morocco and Polisario welcomed the UN Security Council resolution, they maintained the same narratives: territorial unification versus self-determination. How would any mediation succeed if every side refuses the middle ground?
We call this a deliberate stalemate, where you have both parties trying to insist on their perceived legitimacy. So you have two sets of legitimacy on both sides. And they also try to reproduce the same narratives that are colliding with each other. So the first challenge for any third-party intervener, be it the United Nations or any other entity, is that they cannot resolve or make any progress unless they find a way to transform or to sort of move these narratives from their sticky basis. And I mean, the question that remains now is, to what extent the new UN envoy and also Secretary General Guterres are well prepared to push for some convergence of both narratives instead of the classic long divergence of those fixed political positions of the government of Morocco as well as the Polisario Front.
That was Professor Mohamed Chakawi of George Mason University. He was speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shanawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineers, Vasco Volerich and Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.